Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today. I wanted to start out this Critical Family History podcast, episode one, with a moment of gratitude. So we're going to share one thing that we're grateful for. Would anybody like to start?
I'm grateful for family, and we're all together as family. And it's a blessing to be able to be with our family.
True.
And share and break bread together.
Very full.
I'm grateful we can all be together, we're all healthy, and we should spend some time with each other while we can enjoy the rest of our summer. I'm grateful for that.
Truth. I'm grateful that my completed my first quarter graduate school as of 3 p.m. I have a chance to go on a little trip with y'all. Okay, now we're going to breathe in gratitude and breathe out humility. Uh-oh. Still on over that pneumonia.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up moving around to, was it 11?
Nine.
Different, nine states?
Something like that. And yeah. One foreign country.
That's true.
As a child, you don't really know the difference because it's your normal.
True.
Yes. So.
True.
I think we probably thought it was fun in the beginning, and then it probably got old.
Yep.
Yeah. But coming from a large family, it probably was more fun because, you know, you're not the only one. You always have your built-in friends.
True.
Your siblings.
True. Did any sort of racial tension come up in different states or moving to different neighborhoods?
The only time I noticed there were people of a different color was when we moved to Frostburg,
Maryland.
Wow. And there were black people in the neighborhood, and they literally lived on the other side of the railroad tracks, but they went to school with us. So it must have been after Brown versus.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been the early 60s. So we were integrated. There were black children in my school.
Yeah. So that was one of the first memories you have of interacting with.
Yeah, because every place else was north, east, midwest, white. It's all white. And Maryland is below the Mason-Dixon line. So
true.
That was the South.
True. Do you have any memories from being in an integrated school or a desegregated school?
You know, I honestly don't recall it being an issue. I don't remember things happening to kids. There weren't that many kids who were black, but there were some. It didn't seem odd. As a kid, you don't really notice that.
Yeah. Did you ever hear your parents or other, like, people in the white community addressing it?
No.
Yeah.
I think it was worse in California.
Yeah. Did you ever hear talking to, you know, your parents or grandparents or, you know, extended family about when the Scandahoovians moved, you know, to the Dakotas, Minnesota, that region, about any conflicts with indigenous folks? Do you have any stories or musings?
Actually, I should pull out a page from the book I have from the Gunderson side. They were somewhere in the Midwest, and there were Native Americans up on the hillside, and they were wagon training more westerly to a different location, and the tribe came down and surrounded them, and they saw there was some blanket or something that they wanted. So the chief said, if you give me that blanket, I'll let you keep going. Yeah. So I gave him that blanket. I can find that for you. But my other relatives in Minnesota were very prejudiced against the natives.
Yeah.
Hugely prejudiced. Because they lived, you know, cheek by jowl.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. How do you think Grandpa Vern and his experience in World War II affected your upbringing?
Maybe that's why we moved so much. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. He was prejudiced against the Japanese until we bought a Datsun Honeybee. And then I guess it was over.
Yeah. Well, because when Aunt Jenny was here, she was talking about that, or she claims that she would talk to Grandpa Vern about the war. Remember, she was ruminating about talking to Grandpa Vern about...
Yeah, but he didn't talk to us.
Yeah.
He talked to her and Mark because they were military.
Right.
He wouldn't talk to anybody who hadn't been in the military.
Yeah.
So, she knows more than we do.
Yeah. Okay, Dad.
Yes.
Do you have a first memory about you being raised by a Native man and a white mother and having a Native brother? Like how that conversation was introduced?
Well, early on they told us we were adopted, and I think they mentioned that Ken was a, you know, Native Chickasaw or Cherokee. So I think through the Wyoming Guides program, you know, which you know, emphasized Native American culture, there's videos of, we made a little teepee and like dancing around it, you know, that kind of thing. That was probably in elementary school, some of the earliest memories of Native American exposure to Native American culture, I mean, in that way, you know, through that program.
When was the first time you went to Oklahoma?
1965, and that was, let's see, I would have been what, 13? Yeah, and we were exposed to, you know, colored signs for like bathrooms and drinking. I'd never seen that. I was kind of shocked.
Those didn't exist in California?
No. I'd never seen it.
No, I don't think they existed in California.
And it was also during the Watts riots, so we watched that on television.
Wow.
And that was pretty, you know, pretty upsetting. You know, I mean, here's people burning down part of Los Angeles. I'm not sure I really completely understood all the issues at 13, but I thought, you know, something must have happened to make them do that. That's not good, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you just see these, you know, whole communities in flames. And in Oklahoma, you know, they referred to people as colored, so I think at that time, I don't recall them really using the N-word particularly, but there was definitely a sense of, you know, those people lived in certain neighborhoods and there wasn't probably much housing integration in Oklahoma. I can't imagine, you know.
I have that book that you gave me, but I'm very curious about the connection with Hai's father, you know, and the claim that he married, you know, in pursuit of Native land containing oil.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
I have some documents I could look that up in, like, family history, but I
I mean, is that speculation, or?
Well, a lot of people did that.
Yeah.
I have to look. I don't honestly really know.
Did Hai ever talk about it?
No, really.
Yeah.
You know, we were scheduled for that family reunion June 2020. I made hotel reservations. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm going to move on to questions for both of you. And just popcorn out.
Can I mention just something real?
Of course.
So, I told this story when we got interviewed about high, and it was when I was 16, 17. So I volunteered for this San Fernando Valley Fair Housing Council. That's when busing was really big, mm-hmm. you know. And their slogan was good neighbors come in all colors. And high let me put that on the back of our station wagon.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, back in the...
Back then.
What, 60s. Because,
yeah, there was a lot of white flight. That's why Agora blossomed. All the white people.
All the people in my neighborhood moved down to the valley. San Fernando
so Valley. High did not have much tolerance for racial discrimination. He was even though he was more moderate and a little more conservative, he didn't have any tolerance for that at all. So I was always proud that he encouraged me to do that. And, mm-hmm. and I remember I was like leafleting at a supermarket about the Fair Housing Council and those goals and stuff, and I thought that was pretty cool. So I just wanted to say that.
No, I have. We'll have to limit it to my questions. I guess to expand upon that, do you think, was he able to pass as, like, somewhat white? Or did people, like, perceive him as native?
Well, his name was Hiawatha.
Right, but, you know, just, like, did he ever experience any, you know...
He never really talked.
Discrimination in public? Did you ever notice anything?
I don't think so, not really.
Yeah. So, yeah, going off, like, the Watts riots, 65, were you in desegregated schools, Dad? You weren't, Mom. Yours were all pretty uniformly white. Do you have any noticings on, you know, different tensions, especially in elementary school? Or any, like, specific divides?
It was all white.
You know, like...
Very white.
Anything around, like, other people speaking other languages, especially Spanish, like...
You know, we did live in Carlsbad, New Mexico when I was in second and third grade, and we... You had Spanish.
Yeah.
I don't... As a kid, I don't remember...
Like the late 50s? They had Spanish?
We had Spanish. Oh, Carlsbad's surprising. Near the border.
Still, yeah. We have a very monolingual educational policy.
Spanish, yeah.
Especially in the 50s. That's pretty surprising.
I would have been late 50s.
Yeah.
Carlsbad.
I mean, do you remember your friends or parents, any, you know, your white community, like, expressing...
I think some of our neighbors might have been Hispanic, now that I think about it, but I really just, as a kid, everybody's just people.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have known what a Hispanic was.
Yeah.
We were close to the Mexican border, if you look at the map. So there had to have been Mexican Americans everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's New Mexico.
I mean, we always get asked this question, like, when's the first time you noticed that you were white? Or things like that. Do you remember, like, in terms of your socialization, like, when that sort of came up?
Just everybody was white. I don't think I ever... Yeah. Probably not till we came to, well, obviously Frostburg. When I had black students in my class, I realized that they were black and I was white. So probably in late elementary, when you start getting more exposure, I never thought about it.
Yeah.
Ever.
Do you have any memories?
I think... More in elementary school, it was more knowing that some people weren't as well off as other people, so it was more of like an income thing.
Yeah.
There were some Latinos and some Asians in elementary school, but it was more prominent in junior high and especially in high school, because high school included San Fernando. So there was quite, I would say, 20 or 30% of the school was probably Latino. So that was probably the biggest exposure. Was in high school.
So then, when you all moved up here, was it 1978?
No,
or was that San Francisco?
1981.
Permanently.
Permanently. You lived here before. So you moved here to Seattle. What, lived in Shoreline first?
Mm-hmm.
Or Capitol Hill, Shoreline.
Was, yeah.
Capitol Hill when I was in school.
And then over to Redmond. So what are, I don't know, how do you, what did you know, what were the big shifts? And like, how do you think that affected?
Seattle was still pretty white.
Yeah.
Living in the North End and Shoreline, all white.
Yeah.
Redmond, all white, pretty much.
Were there any like, noticings like going to different neighborhoods in Seattle or that were different than LA?
No.
I mean, well, when I came up to UW to go to school, what I noticed was, okay, there's a lot of Asians here. I'm used to that from UCLA.
Yeah.
Where's all the blacks and the Latinos? But, yeah. I mean, it was just, they were just noticeably absent from the student
Such
mix.
Such a white corner of the...
And so there was a lot of Asians in South Pacific, you know, Islanders. But that stood out to me at UW.
Yeah.
And Shoreline was, you know, there was some racial diversity there. But the biggest difference was just generational. Is that we moved to Redmond, it was all young families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was a lot of empty nesters at that time in Shoreline. That's one of the reasons why we went over there.
I did notice racism when, what year did we come here with Skip and Jenna? Was that like 80, 81? Before, like the year before we moved up here, or that was when you were in school.
Yeah.
So like 78.
Yeah.
So they came to visit. We all came on vacation. Why were they here?
Yeah, we went up to Victoria, didn't we?
Yeah. So I remember walking around downtown Seattle or we're at Pioneer Square or something, and somebody came up to Skip and kind of hassled him because he looked. He's Filipino and, you know, looks Hawaiian, and he looked like he was Native American. And somebody came up and just started hassling him. And I remember thinking, well, what is this all about?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you would never have seen that in California. You don't see a lot of Indians walking down the street. But you do here, and they would have been in the city. So they thought he was... Native American. And they said some ugly things to him. I remember that, thinking, this is not anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
So that's here in Seattle, and it's always been here.
Oh, yeah.
We don't see, I only saw it because we were with Skip, who to me just looked like a regular person, but he didn't to other people. He looked like a drunken Indian to whoever was hassling him.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
So
it was... an eye-opener.
I remember when I bought the old Subaru wagon. You know?
The baby blue one? Or light blue?
And so I went over to this car dealership, and you know, we were negotiating and everything, and the guy made a comment afterwards. He says, you really Jewed me down on that.
Oh, I've heard that.
And I'm like, what?
I've heard that
many times.
And I said,
I don't think that's a very nice thing to say. And he goes, okay, I'm sorry. But it's like,
Dave Bowers used to use that phrase.
Really?
This, you would be amazed at what comes out of people if you're listening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So that was
kind of... still there. Still there.
Did you encounter any of that with, I don't know, like families that we were friends with or...
Not very often.
No.
Because we usually...
Because it took me a while to...
People who were... had an education and really didn't talk like that.
Yeah.
Nobody I know really talked like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Milt one time when what's her name was still around. They were all
Gwen.
They were all upset about, you know, all the Hispanics, you know, when were undocumented down in the Tucson area. All the uncompensated care, you know, these hospitals provided, and they felt like they had to pay for it, and it's shown to be for citizens.
Very prejudiced against Hispanics, all of my dad's family.
Yeah.
Very, very prejudiced.
Well, a number of them watched just the Fox News, mouthpiece and spew and all that crap.
Just like Karen and Larry.
Yeah.
Did mom tell you about our little incident on the roof talking about immigration.
You handled yourself very well. Oh, yeah. You were, you know, talking to people whose minds were shuttered.
I mean, we very quickly closed on the conversation. I mean,
it went on longer than I thought it would.
You know, it's like trying to argue with somebody about, like, faith or religion. It's just not really...
Not with somebody like Larry. There's a little more hope with Karen, but Larry, he's a lost cause.
Yeah.
He just is.
Yeah.
I remember in high school that there was, you know, people would talk down about Latino culture and, like, lowriders and dingo ball cars. And,
yep.
Use the derogatory term beaners.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, beaners.
And, you know, when you were a teenager, I don't think necessarily I spoke up against that like I probably should have, but that was the predominant thing of stereotyping that culture and trying to.
Yeah, I heard that in California, but I never heard that anywhere else because I didn't live near Hispanics, but that was very common.
Although at the same time, we thought their cars were pretty cool.
Right.
But that was, I mean, there was definitely, you know, white supremacist type. I think there was a couple of those kids on my cross country team who were pretty good. You know, and it was not, everybody got swatted the same. It's hard to imagine to say that they were, you know, hitting your butt with a big paddle to punish
you. In school?
Yeah.
In high school?
I never, ever saw that, ever.
Oh, God. Yeah. Wait, because you didn't run fast enough?
No, it was some, I forget what the hell it was.
Dude, no school of mine ever did that I knew of.
Yeah. I can't even give a kid a hug.
No.
So that's...
And that was in California? Jesus.
In public school.
In public school.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine times that. Well, that was in the 60s.
Thinking about our family histories, do we think that we've benefited from racism and the marginalization of others?
Well, we've benefited because we have white privilege and we never had anybody call us names.
Yeah.
And we didn't ever have to think about it. I never, ever had to think about what it meant to be white or not white. It's just never, there's never any discussion about. The word white privilege didn't exist.
Right. When did that change, though, for you?
I think fairly recently when the, you know, the whole, I'd say the last 5 years, the whole we've always known that, of course, we're white and we're privileged, but to have that be a thing, white privilege.
To have terminology associated with them.
That you don't have to worry about being stopped by police and hassled. I mean, never having put that together, that's what that means. I never had to think about that.
Yeah.
Well, I think in college and even as an undergrad, you know, some of the courses I took talked about the impact of institutional racism and the racial wage gap is very real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was always.
I mean, because of redlining or whatever, you can't buy in the certain neighborhoods. Yep. Your level of appreciation, even if you were a homeowner, is much less.
Yeah.
And just the lack of opportunity for families over generations, you know, is due to institutional racism is a fact of life that I don't think even many in the liberal community fully understand or don't.
Mm-hmm.
Are uncomfortable talking about, and like Mom said, you're just kind of invisible, you know what I mean, compared to people who are profiled on a daily basis for their skin color or their neighborhood or what have you. So we need to talk about this more. I think I've seen it up in Bellingham even among people that are ostensibly liberal. I mean, you see it when they talk about homelessness a lot.
Oh, God,
you know,
yeah.
It's just like...
Just no...
This is a guy who's screaming at his head up. I think, you know, have a little empathy. This person's having probably a psychotic episode, for God's sakes, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, But I think Black Lives Matter, and well, even in the 60s with, you know, the MLK and Robert Kennedy, and, you know, this has been acknowledged, but I think it's talked about maybe in a slightly more correct way today.
Yeah.
Institutional racism, sort of overt and more subtle, you know, has been around for, and still exists very much yeah. today. And the same with the LGBTQ community. But, and, you know, by the way, just so I talked at the Sikh community up there, and I was mm-hmm. just talking about this. They built this arch of peace and reconciliation by the library, and it's to commemorate
the Sikh riots.
Yeah, the Chinese in the 80s, the same thing happened to them.
In the 80s?
The 1880s. They got run out of town, basically. Same thing with the Sikhs and the Japanese internment of 1942.
Okay.
So it's to document and not forget how awful those three races were treated by white people. You know, and to not...
Don't forget the people after 9/11 that were attacking Sikhs.
Cause they
were,
yes,
they're not Muslim.
They're not Muslims.
I mean, there's just so much ignorance about...
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we operate in, like, these... what we would call progressive liberal circles. And, you know, when we talk about how we know that we benefit from systems, but, like, you know, I thought it was pretty amazing you wanted people to donate to... Northwest Immigrants' Rights Project.
Remind me to do that.
Well, I mean, you were telling people that's what you wanted for your birthday, right?
Yeah, I still need to actually.
You can
that.
Put that on Facebook. What?
I don't.
But like, what? You know, what do we do in sort of action-oriented ways?
I brought two platters of food to when they had that Farm Worker Dignity March.
Yeah. No, I mean, showing up with your body is. Solidarity. I mean, Melanie and I went to a vigil the other night.
Casa de la...
That was it. Centro de la Raza.
I went to...
But what do we do beyond our bodies, you know?
Well, economic I'm talking factors. About some of these issues politically. You don't see Republicans talking about these at all.
Quite I mean, I'm not accusing you. I'm just, you know, saying... Yeah.
I think we have a difficult conversations with our relatives like we did on the roof.
That's what's my next...
The next morning, we had a similar conversation about gun control.
But, I mean, you know, those...
I think we shouldn't be afraid to talk about...
I agree.
...our beliefs.
It's very uncomfortable.
It was very uncomfortable.
But, I mean, I think they're going to cut you off if you, like, attempt to
no,
have these
I
conversations.
No, I think Larry enjoyed it because he dove right into gun control the next morning.
Yeah.
We didn't bring it up. I think he enjoys having those discussions because he thinks he's right.
Yeah.
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 Poor Otto.
Gosh. All right. Well, I'm grateful that we all had a nice conversation.
Well, thank you for asking, bringing
yes.
stuff up.
I mean, this is a nice keepsake also. I mean, I feel like I've learned some things from your upbringing I may not have known before.
Can I ask you, in your upbringing, do you feel like we talked about those kinds of things or gave you values that, you know, are to treat people fairly and not discriminate? And stuff
yeah,
like
no, I think...
I mean, we did live in a pretty, really white community.
We did. I mean, I think... You know, visiting California, I remember a lot when Jack first moved here. Like, seeing other parts of Seattle in a different way.
That's true.
And, like, you know,
the central.
Walking with you, like, and, like, seeing black bodies for the first time, or, like, homeless folks, and, like, I can't remember the exact, you know, words you would say, but it was, like, I got the sense that there was danger, but you would be like, I'm not saying you were implying that, but like, you know,
wonder where we were.
Being around housing projects, whatever, there's a very stark difference between like white suburbia and like where we were.
Well, I think Uncle Jack gave us all an exposure to sort of a different life.
Yeah.
That wasn't the suburbs.
But then, like, I remember...
People were poor, and they lived in different kinds
yeah.
of housing. He lived in a boarding house with a bathroom down the hall.
Yeah.
You'd never been exposed to that.
No. But I remember you, you know, trying to reference that, like, I didn't have to be scared or nervous or, like, saying this is normal. People just live differently. Mm-hmm. In so many words. Mm-hmm. So. Because that was, like, a very, like, siloed experience where then I would go back to suburbia and have this pristine life, you know, like, playing video games in people's basements, going to soccer practice, piano lessons, and, like, having that sort of juxtaposition. And because Capitol Hill in the 90s was still a little funky.
It was very funky.
It was, like, still kind of radically gay, like, a little bit less, you know, bourgeois.
Oh, compared to today.
Compared to today. We still have the Taco Bell on North Broadway.
Even in the mid-70s, it was still...
Oh, it was quite different.
I'm sure the 70s were, yeah.
I liked it better.
Yeah.
There was still, like, a greasy spoon on Broadway that we'd go and have breakfast. There was a really cool used bookstore. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, it really had not been totally gentrified yet. It was coming. You could see there were some shishi restaurants here and there, so it was coming.
Yeah. I remember, going back to elementary school, I remember a couple moments in elementary school when I noticed people being really mean based on other things, like, you know, you would do that thing with your eyes and, like, make fun of
Chinese
folks from different parts of Asia.
Oh,
and then, like, I remember in sixth grade, we got this, a girl transferred and she didn't speak any English. I can't remember her name, but people were terrible to her.
Oh, that's awful.
And I remember feeling, like, proud of myself that I knew that, like, I was treating them with compassion. And, like, I didn't really fall in line with, like, that behavior. And I remember, I just felt like it was, like, I knew that, like, that was taught to me. And then, like, I feel like things shift a little bit in middle school. Everyone kind of becomes a little shit. But, like, in elementary school, I remember I got, like, in my yearbook and stuff, people, like, really commented me on being nice and, like, treating everyone, and, like, being a friend to everyone. And I was, like, I remember feeling really proud of that.
Mm-hmm. That's a good feeling to have.
Mm-hmm. And middle school, everything went to hell. But
well,
we'll just blame that on puberty.
Yes.